Well, Carl, we are back, and we have an interesting guest. His name is Nevin Thompson, and we have him via audio Skype from Japan, where he spends several months of the year. Normally, he lives off the west coast of Canada. But let me just introduce Nevin Thompson. He is the Japan editor for Global Voices. And I'll get him to tell you what Global Voices is in a minute. He's a translator, a writer, a journalist, and he's been connected to Japan for more than 20 years. And our subject of conversation today is the Japanese power utility TEPCO admitted that there was a Fukushima meltdown, and Nevin wrote about that in an article for Global Voices. So, Nevin, congratulations on that, but welcome to Smith Sabatino.
Oh, hi. It's nice to be here.
Tell me, what was the genesis and the substance of your article on the admission that there was a meltdown at Fukushima?
Well, first of all, I think everybody's suspected for a long time that there's been a meltdown at the nuclear power facilities at Fukushima Daiichi. And so when TEPCO, Tokyo Power Utility, admitted last week that there had been a meltdown at one of the reactors, you know, I think a lot of people were saying, yeah, tell us something new. from TEPCO's point of view, they actually are based on evidence. They're, like, they're engineers, an engineering culture, evidence based. So they couldn't really say until now that a meltdown had occurred at one of the four reactors affected by the disaster. And so now they did. And so that's sort of big news. And the reason why that's so important is because, now at least they know how to move forward to get rid of the fuel in that one of the four reactors. They know how to get rid of they have to do something about it. And until now, they had no idea what the status was inside the reactors. So now there's a way forward.
Nevin, what does it mean when it was a meltdown? I mean, is this where the core goes down to the center of the earth and something happens? Or does it kind of stop somewhere? Or even in layman terms, I know you're not a scientist on that, so whatever you can explain is fine with me.
Well, the fuel assemblies, like a nuclear power plant has fuel assemblies that it uses to generate power. In this case, by heating water in a closed system into nearby turbines, which would power nearby turbines, which would generate electricity. And so you have these fuel rods that are sort of in this reactor, and they're kept cool. And then what happened with the accident was the tsunami, the giant tidal wave, like a series of events led to a complete loss of power at the nuclear complex, and the fuel couldn't be cooled anymore, and as a result, because there was no power to power the cooling pumps and so on, the fuel basically melted and congealed in a mass at the bottom of part of the containment and melted its way through.
Nevin. But tell me, is anybody in Japan worried about this?
I think, like, another colleague of mine at Global Voices, I wrote about the earthquakes that had been happening. Because, I mean, like, for a long time after the 3/11 disaster, there were constant daily earthquakes. And she written that the people actually become numb. They become totally numb to these earthquakes that are happening. It was very unusual. And it wasn't really a good thing. It was just that there was nothing that could be done about it. And I think the same thing may be the case for with Fukushima for lots of Japanese folks. There is a lot of opposition to nuclear power. There is a lot of concern. But at the same time, I mean, everybody's kind of in the same boat. Well, some people live further away than others. But like there's this... big lump of corium, melted nuclear fuel, and you can't really do much about it. It's highly toxic, highly radioactive. You've got contamination near the nuclear power plant that has, you know, is there. It's not going away. And so I think people are worried, but they're kind of resigned to it because there's nothing much you can really do.
Well, how about the rest of the world, Nevin? I mean, in terms of if you're going to pollute the seawater at the Pacific, won't the currents take some of that radiation around the world and cause some potential problems down the line?
Well, you know, that's a good point. I live on the West Coast. I live just north of Seattle. So I can actually, I mean, I'm from Canada, but I can see the United States from my house. I can see the Olympic Mountains in Port Angeles and so on, the San Juans. Traces of radioactivity are showing up in seawater off of Vancouver, and probably presumably Seattle as well. But when the nuclear accident happened back in March 2011, I was kind of freaked out because I was in Victoria at the time, in Vancouver, like near Vancouver at the time, and it was raining. And there was actually iodine, short-lived iodine isotope showing up in the seawater around Vancouver. In this case, though, you know, I've got young kids. I'm not terribly concerned because most of the pollution is going to be localized near the Fukushima plant itself.
I have a question that concerns me in a number of different ways, and that is, I've noticed there's not a heck of a lot of news about this. Ronald and I have been on this story since the beginning. I don't see a lot of news coming out other than your organization and a few others who actually get to the story. Do you have any understanding as to why that is?
Well, it's kind of convoluted, for one thing. I was actually trying to do some research about seawater monitoring, and the International Atomic Energy Association does have a seawater monitoring program that ends this year, actually. But I couldn't actually find the damn reports. One of the big Tokyo ministries, one of the big Japanese government ministries, MEXT, does have a monitoring program. I didn't have a chance to look into that, but it's not like, you know, it's highly public knowledge. In Japan, there are citizens groups that monitor it. There's a great organization called SafeCast, which is is just basically regular people setting up their own monitoring system on land. And it's online. You can take a look at that. But beyond that, like there's not a lot of great data. Like, there's, for whatever reason, who knows why, there's not a lot of great public data from either TEPCO or the government. And so you're left with ad hoc reporting.
Is that intentional, do you think? Because the Japanese are very closed in their society, as we know. But this is a problem that affects the world. We've got about 2 minutes left in this segment. We're going to hold you over, by the way, for another segment. But very quickly, is this intentional, holding back the news, or in fact there isn't any new news, just that we have a very serious problem that's not going to go away? Your thoughts, please.
Oh, I don't think that Japan's closed at all. I mean, it's a liberal democracy. There are newspapers and people reporting things. I think there might be some pressure on the newspapers, which are all very collegial and everything's interlinked with, you know, the existing power structure, to maybe not report on it. But there are some great there are some great media outlets that do some good reporting, like Tokyo Shimbun, it's a large paper for Tokyo. So the information's out there, but it's just like people's interests have moved on, as we know. So there's other things to report about, and like I was saying, there's just like not like a central location that says, and today, you know, like the radiation levels in the waters off of Fukushima plant are this. That doesn't exactly exist. So it takes a lot of legwork, I think, and a lot of focus for a journalist to consistently report on that.
That's out there. Certainly an interesting point, Nevin, and I want to talk about that in a minute, particularly about Global Voices and what their ethic and their purpose is, because I seem to get a lot of interesting information on topics that the mainstream media doesn't seem to want to talk about. So we're going to ask you to stand by, hang with us, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
This is Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith as we continue on. Smith Sabatino on America Weekend on the Envision Radio Networks. It wouldn't come out. I'm sorry.
There it is.
Stay with us.
Now, Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. When it comes to child rearing, you need all the responsible do's and don'ts you can get. Here are some very important ones to remember and the developmental science of it. First, do remember that your child is on your side. They are not out to get you. At most, they just want a little more free time. Next, don't give in to a child's tantrum. No child ever died from holding his breath or from screaming themselves silly. Next, do reward your child's attempts to maturely handle a problem. And finally, never use a technique to correct your child that you don't want thrown back in your face in public. If you yell at your child in your home, you'll see your child scream at you in public. What's the cheap psychological trick? Kids do what they see their parents do, and you know what? They respond as they're taught. Got a question? Send it to me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Think green.
Harrison with you. Think your computer's complicated? Consider your eyes with 1 million light receptors, your ears with 24,000 sound fibers, your body 500 muscles, 200 bones, 7 miles of nerve fibers. And while the body holds only 5 quarts of blood, your heart pumps 600,000 gallons through 60,000 miles of veins and arteries. With 2 trillion blood cells, your 3-pound brain has over 13 billion cells. We are part of the environment, too. From the Greeniverse, this is Harrison.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
If you're an inventor who would like to attempt to have your idea or invention patented and submitted to industry, call InventHelp. They have free information for you. Call 1-800-405-9878. That's 1-800-405-9878.